Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this very, very special Sunday night. This is a moment I'm quailing inside about this moment because years ago, more than a decade ago, I had the great good fortune and tremendous pride and pleasure of appearing on television on a program that I had watched since I was a little baby Dave. And this was the Joe Franklin Show, one of the legendary programs in the history of local New York, New Jersey programming, hosted by the one and only the great Joe Franklin. And I got to go on there and talk about the theater magazine I was publishing at that point. And Joe was, you know, really cool, and it was just almost like a dream that had happened. And now, more than a decade later, I get to go back and have the incredible pleasure of having Mr. Joe Franklin on my show, on Dave's Gone By.
Hello.
Hey, Joe, how are you? This is Dave Lefkowitz. How you doing?
All right, my boy.
Oh, my goodness. This is such a proud moment for me.
Oh, proud moment for me too, Dave. I've been a fan of yours since I'm a little kid.
Thank you. Joe, how are you doing?
Well, Dave, I'm doing great. And you certainly bring back one highlight recollection, because when I talk about my TV career, which ran for 43 years, and you were in the Guinness Book of World Records for the world's longest running, either the world's longest running TV show or TV talk show, and then I talk about my favorite guests, that my highlights, I always list five U.S. presidents. I list Cary Grant, Charlie Chaplin, John Wayne, and Dave Lefkowitz. People, when I drop, they think I'm name-dropping when I say Dave Lefkowitz. So for you to say those nice things about me, it goes triple and quadruple what I say about you.
I love it. Now, where did the hyperbole stuff come from? Because I know you've been doing that since way back when I was on the show. Where did this whole thing...
I just hate to say anything cruel. I've never been mean-spirited the way many, you know, today's talk show guests have gone and become. I try to make them all look good and shine good and sparkle good, and sometimes I've got to suppress my own knowledge and let it seem like they're spouting their knowledge, you know, but it paid off, you know, in my business. You held on by the ratings. You know, people always ask me, what's the secret of longevity in that field where the mortality rate is so staggering? There were 500 talk show hosts came and went while I was on there. 500. I always say, the answer is sincerity. You got to be, and once you learn to fake sincerity, then you got it made. You
know, I'm hoping in this short interview that we have to get you to say all your wonderful cliche phrases.
Well,
you've got to end, of course, with the more important to be nice one, but not yet. Not yet. We've got a little time for
Al Jolson once said on my show, he says, here's to our wives and sweethearts, may they never meet.
Oh, yes, indeed. And again, it's really sweet for you to appear on the show, but let's roll it back to the very beginnings where you started on, I assume you started on radio and then got into television.
I began, Dave, as a little kid. I was about 15 years old. I got a job accidentally. I was visiting somebody at radio station WNEW. And Martin Block, you ever hear the name Martin Block?
Vaguely, yeah.
He was the host of a program called the Make Believe Ballroom.
Oh, of course, yes.
Very tremendously high-rated show. He saw me in the hallway, and he offered me a job. He said his record taker just got fired or quit, and he offered me a job. I knew nothing about music. I didn't know Harry James from Artie Shaw, from Benny Goodman, but a fellow working at that station named William B. Williams.
Of course, yes, yes.
Gave me like an overnight crash course in music, and I was choosing the records from Martin Block. Then Martin Block says, Joe, I'll get you your own radio show if you want. You got a nice voice, and I like you. He got me my own radio show, which I call Vaudeville Isn't Dead, and I play these old records.
So at that point, you had chosen, then, the kind of music that you wanted to play, because at first, as you said, you didn't know music, but then did you find yourself gravitating to older material from the 20s and 30s?
That's an interesting question, Dave, because he told me, he said, Joe, I'm the king. I mean, he's the king, he said, of new records, so I shouldn't compete, as if anybody could compete with him. But he said, don't compete with me, Joe. So I ran out to the old record shops around town. I bought these old records for a penny apiece by Rudy Valley, by Kate Smith, by Eddie Cantor, and I play them on the radio. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, here's a collector's item. It's worth $500. And I go back to the store the next day. I pick out five records, put down five pennies. He would say, hey, come here, kid. I said, what do you mean, kid? He'd say, I heard somebody on the radio saying last night these records worth $500. So I single-handedly, I think I created what you might call the rare record market, you know?
And apparently you're also, well, sort of taking credit for coining the word and the usage of nostalgia. Is that really your
thing? Well, that's also a great point, because if you look in the dictionary, nostalgia means longing for the old home, with nothing to do with show business. So at least, like, I gave it a spin. There's a thing on Channel 13 this week, this Thursday night at 8 o'clock, called Soundies. It's going to be a two-hour tribute to the Soundies, the little MTV shorts, and I'm on there. I'm one of the featured hosts with Michael Feinstein. So if you're a TV set Thursday night, 8 o'clock, you you might watch that. But then, and then one day, David, I got a phone call from Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of lighting up in the daytime. The TV was only on the air then from 5 o'clock at night until sermonette. There was no daytime TV. They said, Joe, we're thinking of lighting up in the daytime. If we give you an hour a day, what kind of a show would you do? I said, well, how about I do a show of people talking nose to nose, eyeball to eyeball? They said, Joe, you're out of your mind. The word is television. You got to give a vision. You got to give seltzer bottles, pratfalls. You got to give baggy pants. You got to give burlesque. You can't do a talk show on television.
But you did.
No, then I said, well, if I can't do it, so how about, because rock and roll was just, I said, how about I do a show of kids dancing to records? I said, Joe, you're nuts. No, who's going to watch kids dance to records?
No, wait, you really thought of the idea for American Bandstand before there was an American Bandstand?
And Dick Clark, is what Dick Clark, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Comes along, becomes a billionaire.
Well, you did all, you have done, that's the beautiful thing, I think, about your career, that you've done it so sort of off the beaten track in a way, and yet doing it exactly the way you wanted to do it, the things you wanted to do, and yet having your niche, having the show last for decades on TV and radio, and then having all sorts of other sidelines of a career. I think that's fabulous.
I think it is. The funny thing is that I began on WNEW, which is 11:30 a.m., and I'm back on 11:30 a.m. now. I'm on Bloomberg Radio, you know, doing interviews this week. We got Charles Grodin, we got Mickey Rooney, we got Larry Hagman.
Mickey
got,
Rooney, wow.
86 years old, he's peppier than we are, Dave.
I know, I saw him off, he did a one-man show off, well, it was him and his wife.
I saw that was beautiful, yeah, isn't he great?
Well, he's still got the spirit.
You know that he's the only actor ever to be number one at the box office 4 years in a row, from 1939 to 1943. Mickey Rooney was number one over Clark Gable, over everybody. He's a tremendous entertainer. I'm just thrilled to know that he's still traveling, he's still lively and sparkling. Like this week I've got Charles Grodin, I got Pat Boone, we get, you know, people. I'm not playing any old music right now. I may go back in the old record business soon, but it's been a great career. I love it.
Well, when you have so many guests, I mean, you might as well, you know, go for them, because the music you can play anytime. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, and also, the reason I used to watch you when I was a kid wasn't so much the interviews, which I wasn't that into, but every once in a while, I would be so excited because you would show a silent film.
In fact, Billy Crystal, his first book, you know, Billy Crystal impersonated me for 4 years on Saturday Night Live. You know that, right?
I know.
First time I saw Billy Crystal was Joe Franklin. You know what I said? I said, Billy, one of us is lousy.
Now, hold on. But actually, I do want to ask about this, because I've heard things about where when someone has been impersonating you, you weren't too happy, and sometimes you wanted to like, sue them, like Uncle Floyd.
Well, Uncle Floyd did. I mean, we're good friends now. We're very close. But in those days, he would do a takeoff. I mean, I don't know if I can say these words on radio. He had four Jewish, four men with yarmulkes, and they were blowing snot bubbles into a glass.
I remember that.
On the Joe Frankfurter
yes,
show.
Yes, I remember. I don't remember.
So I had to sue the guy. I had to sue him, and he was taken off the air immediately. But we made up. We became good. That was very horrible taste. I love a spoof. I love, you know, my whole life, Dave, was a spoof. I did my whole life tongue-in-cheek. You know, so when Billy Crystal was doing Joe Franklin on Saturday Night Live, he was doing a spoof on a spoof, you know, my whole life.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard you say that, too. But the thing is, I've also seen, I mean, there was a point when I interviewed you for a magazine, and then there were times when I came in and I was trying to get on your show.
Right.
And when you weren't on the air, you were still the Joe Franklin who's on the air. It was a little odd to see, because I assumed you would be a totally different person, and you weren't.
Yeah, there was one persona, and that was me. I just enjoyed it. Billy Crystal, I saw it, but his first book,
yeah,
called Absolutely Marvelous, he wrote, in the interview, he dedicated the whole book to me. He said his first acting lesson was pretending to be sick so he could stay home and watch my show. And, you know, I'd show these old movies with Rudy Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy and Three Stooges. And
Charlie Chase, you would show. I mean, for Ben Turpin, yeah. I mean, that was cool.
That is why I didn't want to be a comedian. So that was quite a tribute from Billy Crystal.
Now, is it true, and I had no idea about this until I did a little Googling the other day, that your real name was Fortgang?
When I was born, it was Joseph Fortgang. Then I went to Benjamin Franklin High School, and I like the name Franklin. It's easier on the marquee, so, you know, so one letter less.
But was there an aspect of it of, like, at that point in your career, was it, like, too Jewish-sounding, Fortgang?
I think Fortgang in German means go forth. I looked it up one time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it, probably if I started out today, I would have kept the real name. You know, in the old days, everybody was named Baker or Powell or Williams, you know, but I think maybe Sinatra and Streisand, and you know, people like that keeping their own name, that sort of changed the pattern of having to choose a more all-American sounding name, you know. So But whatever it is, we did okay with that name.
And one of the other great things is that because of you being you, again, you were spoofed on Saturday Night Live and Uncle Floyd, and you got to even work with Woody Allen. I mean, what was that? Was he ever on your show? I assume he was.
I discovered Woody Allen was on my show when he was appearing at the bitter end as a young stand-up comedian. He was on the same panel with Jack Warner. Jack Warner was on the day show, his Academy Award that he won for My Fair Lady for producing that. And Jack Warner took a liking to him, and he offered him a job emceeing the press junkets for a movie called The Great Race.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon and Natalie Wood. So Woody Allen always felt very sentimental about me. If I'm not in his movies in person, they'll always show my TV show or show a book on a table that I wrote. But I play the pivotal scene in Broadway, Danny Rose. And then I'm in Ghostbusters. I'm in quite a few movies. I just made a new one called Mercy Man. But I usually play myself, except sometimes they tell me that I'm not the type to play myself, you know? So
a more Joe Franklin-y kind of Joe
Franklin. Yeah, yeah. They say, give me somebody more like Joe Franklin. He's not the type, you know? But it's fun. I do a lot of lectures, nursing homes, colleges, and things like that.
Now, after all these years, would you still consider that Bing Crosby or Eddie Cantor was your favorite guest of all time, your favorite entertainer?
It would be a toss-up. You hit it right on the head.
Yeah.
I always thought of Bing as being what you call mechanically reproduced. I always thought of Bing being on radio, TV, movies, records. But when Bing came toward me, flesh and blood, that day, I think I melted. I think I did my best interview that day. And by the way, Bing in private life was not romantic. He was very aloof, very cold, very icy. He would tell the songwriter, don't say the word I love you twice in one song. Just say the word I love you once. But that day with me, he was just like an old-time Ford Billion. He was so at ease and warm and wonderful. Maybe he was showing off to his wife. The wife was on with him that day, you know. And then they went to some other show where they didn't want to put on Kathy Crosby. And he did that show, but very cold, very icy. So he was the greatest. I enjoyed being Eddie Cantor, of course, is number one too.
Wow. Now, that stuff you still have, I guess, on Kinescope or old VCR tapes. I mean, how much of your shows, both TV and radio, do you have as an archive?
Out of about 28,000 TV shows, I saved about 500. Sadly, they used to record over the shows to save money, so they were erased the very next day. But I saved. I got Milton Berle. I got Fay Wray. I got Bob Hope. I got Jack Benny. I got Jack Benny was on my show. He was on with Bill Cosby. And Bill Cosby. And so Jack Benny said, you know, I go back to the days. He said, I go so far back, my rabbi was an Indian. So Bill Cosby says, oh, yeah, was his name Mohawk?
Uh-huh.
So somebody says, I bet they did the circumcision with a tomahawk. You know, great kids, folks.
Now, here's the deal, then. Are we going to be able to, have you ever thought about making a deal with a distribution company the way, say, the old Dick Cavett shows are now being
released?
Well,
you know something, we're working on what they call an errors and omission policy to get the insurance cleared up in advance. It's a Herculean task, but it is being done. I think that the best of Joe Franklin will be on the sale definitely before Christmas. By summertime. Yeah, you'll get the first copy off the press.
Okay. That's wonderful. Now, let me ask, you on some level are this one-man band, but at the same time, there are always these people behind the scenes. There's Richie Orenstein and some other folks really helping you out, because it's a Herculean task just collecting.
Richie did my long-time anchor man. Richie's the best of the best. And it's a funny thing that you would say that. I never had a staff. I never had a talent coordinator. I did all my own booking. I never once called up a guest. Everybody ever on my show ever came to me. I never once solicited a guest, so I guess, you know, I never rehearsed. I never met them in the green room and went over the format. I figured if you go to lunch with somebody, you don't rehearse the dialogue before the meal. You just let it flow, let it go spontaneously. So I don't say that's the way to do it. I'm sure that David Letterman and Jay Leno have huge production meetings, so what I did, certainly unconventional. Maybe it held me back from even going further, but at least you can't knock it. It was my own system. I never had any talent coordinators. Never.
Do you still have that amazing office?
Oh, it's worse now than ever, yeah.
How could it be? You have to just put your head in and the rest of your body out in the hallway.
Not easy. I got a Rudolph Valentino's coffee cup from 1926. Oh,
that. Man. But you know, and nobody else knows, I guess, where every single thing is.
Someday I'll get it organized. Someday I'll make a museum. I've been selling a few things on eBay. You know, I used to ask my guests for souvenirs, but it's a fun way of life. I've enjoyed it.
Now, are you married, still married?
I'm married to a lady named Lois. She lives in Florida. She's not too well, but she's very alert. She's got deals in real estate. I've got a son, 37 years old, named Bradley Franklin. He's in mail order field. He sells to what he says is the second biggest marketplace in the world. He sells teenage girls. He sells...
What?
He sells lipsticks. He sells jewelry. He sells movie star addresses. You know, so he's...
Yeah, no, if he's selling teenage girls, I'm buying, but no, I don't know what that means.
Sells them over the counter, right? You can buy any age you like, but he sells them merchandise, you know. The teenage girls' daddies give him a lot of what they call disposable income, so he's in a pretty good field.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of teenage girls, what was your thought, your initial thought, when The Aristocrats came out, and there was the whole Sarah Silverman monologue?
Well, you know something, I was duped, I was defamed, and I'm...
Oh, with, well, in humor, as
well. Well, I don't know. I'm going to sue them. I want to sue them. I'm going to make a lawsuit. I'm going to go after the producer, Paul Preventer. I will, you know, they came to me. They said it's going to be a movie where comedians tell their favorite jokes. I was set up. I was set up. But listen, I think she's, and the more popular she gets, the better my, I've got a lawyer in California who wants to take it on a contingency basis. So we'll,
but are you just doing it to kind of keep your name out there, or do you really feel offended by
well,
a joke?
It's a combination. I got a good lawyer. He says we're going to show them that they can't mess with Joe. That's what he said. Like, I'll let him worry about it. You know, it's it was tongue-in-cheek, but it was also very cruel. I was definitely framed because what they told me was not what came out on the screen. And when they showed the screening, I was there at the preview audience and Paul Lorenzo, the producer, said, Joe Franklin, he can certainly take it. You know, he's a good sport. Joe's a good sport.
Right.
And he knew he did wrong. He knew he did wrong.
Oh, well, I hope
that was your take. There was good humor. I should forget about it.
Completely. I mean, she could have said, like, Sherman Helmsley and done the joke about him, but she chose you.
Yeah.
I think you should just not let that roll over you. It's just all and the whole movie is a sick joke. So, yes, of course, it's a sick piece of comedy, but you should be proud to be part of it.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll give it a shot. Hello, this is Joe Franklin. As in Joe Franklin's Memory Lane. You're joining me and listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. And Dave is one of my very favorite broadcasters, so keep on listening to Mr. Dave. Thank you so much.
So, other really moments that you remember and loved from the TV show? Some unexpected great moment? Doesn't have to be from a famous person, but other things that just come to your head when you think of the great moments you've had on the TV show.
Well, things that I did, I would always try to mix. I would have the dancing dentist on there with Ronald Reagan. I would have the man who whistles through his nose on there with Margaret Mead. I would have what they would call that. An eclectic mix, you know what I'm saying?
And that was you really wanted to do that, Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, with the nose whistler.
That was my shtick, yeah. That was my shtick.
So you knew it. You knew that it was on some level ridiculous, but also on some level, you never know what's going to happen, and that makes it fun.
You never know, and I had the pleasure of giving the first exposure. I mean, nobody discovers anybody, but I gave the first exposure ever to, you know, my singer was Barbara Streisand for about 9 months, and Bette Midler, Eddie Fish, she was my, these people sang with me for a period of time, and I gave the first exposure ever on TV to Liza Minnelli, had Michael Jackson on 5 times with the Jackson family, he's a cute, beautiful little kid. Wow. I had Al Pacino, Dustin Hoffman, Tiny Tim, Joan Rivers, I mean, it's endless, the ones who made their first, Bill Cosby, the first exposure on my show, the list is endless.
Is the Streisand story true that she would hang around a lot around that office and that you know, with the crew, sort of those people who were always milling about for those early weeks of her career?
Oh, yeah, and Bette Midler made that record, the Boogie Woogie Google Boy of Company B, that's from my sheet music collection. She found it in my sheet music archives. Getting my sounding. I'd like to get that sheet music back someday if she's listening right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure she is. Badge, if you're listening, please give Joe his music back.
Right.
So now what do you do for Bloomberg Radio? Is it
just interviews. It rotates around the clock 7 days a week. This week I had Gerald Schoenfeld of the Schoenfeld Theaters. I had, you know, the Schubert Organization.
Yeah.
I had, what's his name? Rick Burns, Ken and Rick Burns, the documentary makers.
Do you, and how long do you get to? Is it a half hour?
About 7 minutes. 7 minute features. I had Judy Gold does a show called 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. I like Judy Gold. She's very short, but 6'3" without shoes on.
Now, do you still, I know you still see all the Broadway shows. Cause I,
yeah, well, I meet you this year. We're both the first night.
Do you still try and see all the Broadway shows?
Yeah, I try to make my, you know, I think I was the first media critic, or maybe I was right after Stuart Klein. Remember Stuart Klein?
On Channel 5, yes.
Yeah, he's gone now.
Well, yeah. Well, lots of people. I mean, that's the beauty of your lasting this long and keeping
going. The average age of my friends is deceased.
No, but you're actually, let's disabuse people of a certain notion. You're in your mid to late 70s. It's not like you're
right,
in your 90s.
Close to 80, but I tell the girls I'm 39. I look very young. I look about maybe 62 and a half.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying life.
Do you exercise? Do you eat well? Or do you just, whatever you want to do?
I don't exercise. The only saving grace, I guess, I don't drink and I don't smoke. I don't curse, but I don't exercise enough. I don't take, my blood pressure is a little bit elevated, but I'm taking Diavan for that, so I guess that's bringing that down. But otherwise, I'm holding my own for a guy my age. I'm doing pretty well, I think, you know?
And are you still running that, first you had that restaurant, but then it was just the comedy segment of it. Are you still?
Well, no, I'm still the boss. I had my name out front that day for 5 years called Joe Franklin's Memory Lane on 45th Street and 8th Avenue, and we had a merge with Charlie O. Down the block was Charlie O. Boston. At least they raised their rent from $75,000 a month to $300,000 a month, which I cannot believe that. So now we merged. We got my name in the window. Joe Franklin's Comedy Club. I'm still the boss. I'm still the business. It's a Reese. Now we got a new comedy club in Fridays on 7th Avenue and 50th Street.
Oh.
It's a big one now. Joan Rivers comes in there. Jackie Mason, Bill Cosby. It's Friday and Saturday nights.
Do you ever go on vacations to places, or are you always in New York?
I've never been. I gave you a list of things I've never done. You'd never believe it. I've never had a driver's license. You know, I've driven a car, but I never had a. I never went to a beach. Never had my feet in the sand. You know,
you're kidding me.
I never played golf. Never played cards. I was at my peak, Dave. I was doing 3 TV shows a day. I was on 3 times a day on Channel 9. I was on Channel 7, 15 years, and Channel 9 for 30 years. And I just never stopped, just kept on going.
Do you miss having you do still have the Bloomberg interviews, but do you miss having that 5 or 6 hours of radio time or the hour a day of TV time?
No, I may go back in TV. I got about 6 companies I promised I'd go back.
Oh.
Cable channels. I may and I may not. I had to give up the all-night radio show after all those years I was starting it. You know, when you're on from midnight to 5, about 3 o'clock in the morning, you start to blur your words.
Yeah.
You get a little tired. I'm not different when I was 17 or 23, but it's fun, and I do a lot of, I'm very popular on the on the campus level. The kids, the students like me. I do a lot of college lectures. I'm going to go to Cornell in about a week or two again, the hotel, the restaurant school, you know, and it's, I do a lot of lectures at colleges, nursing homes, the old
school. Lovely. Now, I'm wondering, you mentioned that you do have the son who is, selling the women's stuff. But what about the person, God forbid, I mean, here's hoping you'll be with us till you're 120.
At least
but,
a week more from now, right?
Yeah. But after, I mean, have you thought about sort of who will deal with everything so that it doesn't just go nowhere or just wind up on, I mean, maybe a museum or something? Have you thought about what's going to happen to your stuff?
I'm the great procrastinator. I keep saying I'm going to organize a museum or an exhibition or something someday soon, and I guess someday I will, but I just haven't gotten around to it. It's one of those sad things. I'm so lazy. But I'll get around to it.
Lazy is not a word I would associate with you. What would you say? We're coming to the end of this segment, but I don't even want to let you go. It's just so great to talk to you.
I'll come back for part two whenever you want. By the way, I think we ought to mention that I've written 24 books. My new one is called Joe Franklin's Great Entertainment Trivia. It's a game. It's an interactive game. And it's already sold 45,000 copies.
Lovely.
And they're all in my house, though. I'm only kidding. No, it's a big, big seller.
No, anybody who listens to your radio show knows that you and Richie used to do the trivia questions.
Oh, yeah. So trivia is a big... I should have invented trivia. I should have put out Trivial Pursuit, but I was so preoccupied. But it's a very popular book called Joe Franklin's Great Entertainment Trivia. It's published by Square One in Long Island. Have you got your copy?
Not yet. The
second
is going to promise to get me one. I know that when I was a kid, I read your silent film book
oh, well,
cover to cover again and again. I mean,
that's sold over a million. That's called Classics of the
Silent Screen. Oh, absolutely. And also the one you did on comedians. I mean, your books are just fun.
I wrote Joe Franklin's Awfully Corny Joke Book, Joe Franklin's Memory Lane Cookbook.
There was an autobiography of you a while ago.
Oh, yeah, that was called Up Late with Joe Franklin. I wrote a book with Marilyn Monroe.
What?
Oh, yeah. If you look on eBay, it sells for $8,000. It's called The Marilyn Monroe Story by Joe Franklin, about 1953. And the reason it sells for that is the publisher died. He died the day it came out, and only a few thousand copies were released to the public. So it sells for $8,000 on eBay now, and it's very hard to find.
Well, I guess I want to ask then. I mean, it was an authorized biography, right? You were able to talk
absolutely,
to...
yes. I started the book with her. We did the first two or three weeks together. I met her on a radio program called Luncheon at Sardi's before anybody signed. I was seated there between Marilyn Monroe and Molly Peacock. Oh,
of course.
So then they took her away in the middle. But well,
how was Marilyn to deal with and talk to when the cameras weren't rolling?
Very sweet, very pretty, very beautiful. She loved men. I had nothing with her, by the way.
Joe.
The men would think they were conquering her. She was conquering them. She had a great need for men, you know?
Hmm. Was she with DiMaggio or with Miller at that point?
I think she was just here from California. She was unhappy with the movies they were assigning to her, and she came in to go to Strasbourg School and brush up on her acting procedure, acting technique. But I don't think she was married to either of them yet.
Did you sense tragedy going to happen to that she was not going to be with us? Or you just saw a sweet girl?
That's all, just a sweet kid, nice kid. It was just very sad the way it went with her, the way it went now with Anna Nicole Smith. Cara Lombard when she was so young, all these beautiful blonde ladies.
Why do you think it happens?
I don't know. And look at Veronica Lake, who was my anchor lady for 100 times on TV. She just died at the age of 53, which is, you know, not as bad as 36 or 39, but still it's sad. Sad endings. Veronica Lake, Dave, in 1944, was the highest salary woman in movies. Then in 1950, she got a congressional medal for what she did for the war bonds. And then about 2 years later, she was taken out of her house bodily and placed in the gutter for not paying income tax. You know, the system can be cruel. Who knows?
I mean, she wasn't on alcohol or drugs or anything.
No,
just
never was.
Failing
to
pay.
Just that boyfriend, husband who did some creative bookkeeping, you know. Hello, this is Joe Franklin. That's in Joe Franklin's Memory Lane. You're joining me and listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Well, who are some of the more happy success stories that you interviewed more than once? That you had something of a professional...
Well, like Georgie Jessel 110 times.
Yeah.
Rudy Valli about 90 times. Otto Preminger about 75 times.
Now, he must have been kind of interesting.
He was kind of a pretty stern... but he liked me. He just liked me. If he likes you, he likes you. I gave the first exposure to Jennifer O'Neill, to so many, but it's gratifying. Most of them don't come back. Most of them, people always say, do they come back? Most of them don't, because I sort of symbolize. I represent them at the time they were broke. They don't want to be reminded. They see me, they're reminded of the time they were broke, so they walk across the street when they see me. But
I don't think that's true I remember you saying that years and years ago. I don't think that's true. Now you're such a legend yourself.
Probably human nature. I like the word legend. The other night, I went to see Michael Feinstein at the club, and he said, in our audience, a young fellow spent his whole life chronicling the legends, and in doing so, became a legend himself. And he introduced me, which I thought was a nice introduction, you know?
And it's actually true. It's not, that is not hyperbole. You really are a broadcasting legend, and I think that's so cool. Did you ever, in all the years that you can remember, did you ever lose your temper during the show?
Not really. I don't think so. I kept cool. I think the audience could always tell that I was cool. Certain guests didn't excite me, and they could read between the lines. But people used to say Joe Franklin is neutral. He's bland. He doesn't take sides. But there were other people who could read between the lines. I could make a very strong acid point, but I made it in such a way that I was what you might call lovable and kissable and huggable. I did it in a nice way. I can get away with it. You know, I could make the same point as Alan Burke or Joe Pine could make, but I did it in a cute, in a baby face way.
Hmm.
I could therefore get away with it.
And if the whole thing, all of the nostalgia, the film, the radio, and all, had not worked out, what do you think you would have wound up doing?
Well, my original intent was journalism. I went to Columbia for 2 years, and then when I got the job in radio, I never went back and never finished college. I'd be a writer. I've written the books. I'd probably be working on a newspaper. But
do you regret not finishing college, or is that
I did okay. I regret people that I wanted on the show. That I would see them around town. They scared me. I would remember Fred Allen, the comedian.
Oh, yeah, well, not personally, but yes, I know.
Bags under his eyes. Mm-hmm. Groucho Marx, who always looked so dour. And Bert Lahr and George S. Cohan. Later on, in every case, I found out when they died, they were only waiting to be invited on the Joe Franklin show, you know? So just a question. Those are the ones I would have invited, even though I never invited anybody. But they scared me. I learned later on to be a little bit more aggressive, a little more aggressive, you know?
I think someone asked you a long, long time ago who the one person you wish you had, like, had on. Was it Garbo?
Greta Garbo, yeah. We'd meet around town. We'd meet in perspective, in retrospectives of her movies. And she'd smile. I mean, she wouldn't come on the air. I would play her soundtracks on the radio, and I could hear her companion would call me up and say that Ms. Garbo was listening. I could hear her sniffling. So I know she was very much aware of me, but she wouldn't go on.
Just because she was afraid that fans would see that she had aged, or was it?
I guess that's the reason. It's a great point. There's like Marilyn Monroe, Greta Garbo. They're frozen in time. Had they lived on and seen them when they were older and wrinkled, it would have shattered that wonderful illusion we have. You think of them now, the way they were when they were young and beautiful, you know?
Well, that's why I wear a mask every time I leave the radio station. I mean, I don't want people to see that I'm not the adorable
17. Yeah. When I see you around town, you look fantastic. What's the last show you saw, Dave?
Oh, thanks for asking. Actually, I saw the off-Broadway show Howard Katz. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Alfred Molina is very good in it.
Not going to win the Academy Award this year.
Afraid not. No, it doesn't hang together. Although the playwright's earlier works are really good. He did Closer and Dealer's Choice, and those are wonderful plays.
Mm.
But Katz doesn't. Did you see Journey's End?
I saw it the other night. I liked it.
That's terrific. It's a marvelous old play.
Very noisy, eh?
Well, towards the end of war.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everybody, it's funny, I thought, I am someone who despises loud, startling noises in the theater.
Right.
I don't want to be shocked like that. But if it's, in this particular case, I thought the noise was absolutely apt and
very
not
apropos.
Overdone.
Yeah. It was really important, and the acting was sensational.
Yeah, literally, pretty much from man to man, everyone from Boyd Gaines on down. They were just... It's a really, really good production.
Well, Dave, I hope you come on my show one day soon. On Blue
Anytime, Joe.
We'll tape it, and I hope that you'll be watching for my book.
Of course. Please remind people the name of the book and where they can get it.
It's called Joe Franklin's Great Entertainment Trivia Game. I guess it's on any bookstore or Amazon.com. It's now in its third printing, you know.
Who's the publisher?
The first two printings were blurred. The publisher is Square One. Very beautiful people. I think they're in place in Long Island. Great people.
Speaking of beautiful and great people, and the greatest person who ever lived, ladies and gentlemen, is on my radio show right now, Joe Franklin. What a pleasure, what a joy it has been to talk to you. And please remind folks the most important thing about what it means to do anything in your life, to be a host or anything. What is the most important? You got to tell me.
Well, main thing is don't bump into the furniture.
Uh-huh.
Don't leave your wallet in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. They get stolen, and above all, I would always ask my guests for some little maxim, something inspirational toward the end of the interview. And it was Harry Ritz who said, "May you live as long as you want, and may you never want as long as you live." So
that's sweet. I was always also talking about the one about why, you know, it's nice to be important.
It's more important to be nice. I got that from Eddie Cantor. That's been picked up by George Burns and a lot of people. So. Listen, all we want is to keep on as long as we can keep on keeping on. There's a kind of a youth quake going on now where the word nostalgia is almost a dirty word. So we're gonna keep fighting the tide as long as we can, right?
God bless you. I hope you do. I hope we all do. Joe Franklin, a pleasure to have you in the neighborhood.
Dave, my pleasure. My pleasure. and do invite me back, please.
Anytime.
God bless you and yours, Dave.